Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B.
Today's guest is Philip Moore, 15 years of career experience, currently a backstep for the City of Schertz Fire Rescue in Texas. Philip assists with the Dagum Conference, Legacy Conference, and with No Quit Writ, former instructor for Ridge Fire Academy in Winter Haven, Florida. Philip has had his shares of ups and downs and is not afraid to talk about it. But with the help of being around true friends and brothers, he is now back into the profession he loves and truly is out here trying to make a positive difference for himself and those around him. Leaving the job better than he found it is all we could strive for. With that, I present Mr. Philip Moore.
All right, my name is Philip Moore. I got into the fire service back in 2002. I'm kind of one of the people that's a post 9/11 people. I was in college when that went down, and I was like everybody else. I was angry. I wanted to do something and be involved and try to help somehow. And I looked at military. I looked at all that kind of stuff, but I kind of really broke it down. I'm not a killer. I'm more of a let's go do something for somebody kind of thing. So I started looking at the fire department. And my dad, growing up, had been a volunteer. He was the chaplain for a local department when I was growing up. So I'd run calls with him. I'd been in the engine when he's going to stuff, just me and him in the engine going to things. And my best friend growing up, a guy named Daniel, his dad was a captain at one of the local military bases. He was a DOD firefighter, had been with them for 20 something years at that point. So we'd go play at the fire station. So I grew up around it. There's pictures of me 3 or 4 years old, my dad's bunker gear. It had been in the back of my mind. But I was kind of in a different place at that point. I was in college. I was a college athlete, and I was going to coach and teach. That was the whole thing. And it never really, that was just kind of the thing. I want to go to college to play ball. And then that was just kind of a natural progression where you turn into a coach, you turn into a teacher, that kind of stuff, if you want to stay involved in the sport. And that was really my forefront. When 9/11 happened, dude, it changed everything. Pair that, then I needed a job. I needed a job now. My wife at the time was pregnant. Government job has benefits. I needed insurance. I needed that kind of stuff. So I rushed through. So I talked to my guidance counselor. See, probably in November then of 2001, and said, hey, I need to leave with something next semester, because I was supposed to graduate with my bachelor's the following December, but I need to leave next January, May with some type of degree. So I ended up with an associate's degree. That has really been for not a whole lot. If we're honest, the college experience wasn't just that thing that just defined life, but it put me in a position to be able to have some promotions and stuff down the road by having some type of degree. So May of 2002, I jumped right in the fire academy. I was very lucky in that I had worked for a little city in Central Florida doing grass cutting. I'd been a summer worker for them. And when I was going into the fire academy, guy that I worked for, I ran into him. I was in basketball shorts, a cutoff shirt, and, you know, slides. Ran into him. He's asking, what's going on? What are you doing these days? Da, 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 da. I told him. He's like, you want to work here? And I'm like, I don't know where I want. I need a job. My wife's pregnant. So I got left inside McDonald's for a few minutes, and he's like, hey, the chief's on the way. So I got my start in the fire service interviewing in flip-flops and basketball shorts for a little department for a city I'd worked for cutting grass, and it's just gone from there. And I've loved it. Now, I've walked away from the job at one point and came back to it, had personal issues, ended up in a really nasty divorce with that lady and all kind of stuff. And like everybody in the world's gone to the hot button now, I had the mental health issues and sought counseling and turned into a drunk and had to fight my way back from that and everything else that goes along with that. But that's where we're at now, and here we are 22 years later. I'm riding backseat and loving life. So
all right, I mean, you know, I gotta give it to you, everybody goes through ups and downs, what, you know, ebbs and flows, but the main positive focus is you battled it and you won. Like, and I'm not saying it was easy, but you, because, you know, sometimes whatever happens in people's lives, man, sometimes it they lose that fight somehow,
They
some
do.
way or another. But
And I did.
you're
I did for a while. I
okay.
absolutely did. I went very dark places during that. I know what it's like to think, oh, man, this is my last day on earth. I went that route. And I didn't fight any of that alone. I had a good support network. But for a long time, I just basically spit in their face. I didn't listen to them. I wouldn't accept help. I wasn't ready yet. And what really got me back into it is a guy I worked with at the first department. I'll name him Donnie Krantz, works for Orange County Fire Department in Central Florida. I ran into him at SeaWorld. And he literally looked at me. He said, "Hey, man, when are you going to stop pretending you're something you're not? You're a firefighter. Go do that." And it was like getting slapped in the face. And that was kind of the turning point on that. I was just floating along. I'd done all kind of jobs. I mean, at that point, I had a pretty good job. I was a brewer. I was making beer at this point. I was enjoying that. But there was not a day that if I heard a federal cue going past, I'm like, "Where are they going? What are they doing in that?" And I learned a phrase during that that somebody I may have read online or something like that is get your ladder leaned to the right building. I was okay. My ladder was leaned on this building. I was climbing that ladder, but my ladder was leaned on the wrong building. I had to get around the right building so I could start climbing that ladder.
Awesome. I like the way you put that. I like that phrase. I've never heard that, but I like it.
It was kind of an eye-opening thing. And I heard that like 10 days after Donnie basically slapped me in the face and said, "Hey, get your shit together." So.
Right. Okay. All right. So, you go through your series of events in life. You move to Texas and you join Shirts. What has that been like? Like, who do you surround yourself with, and things like that?
I'm blessed. The just outside of San Antonio area is a training rich environment. Next door to me, I've got Cibolo, I've got Live Oak. We literally run basically automatic seamless borders with Cibolo. They have three stations, we have three stations, and it's closest unit. So I'll run in Cibolo all the time. Cibolo runs with us. I've got Tom Hollick in there. I help teach with Tom now with the No Quit Writ stuff. I've got Kevin Pfluger around there. I've got a very good network in there. My girlfriend is a firefighter for City of Seguin. They hold the Legacy Conference, all that kind of stuff. That was literally what brought me out to Texas the first time was her. I'd ran into her. It's why I met her. It was at a conference in Pensacola, CFT. We hit it off. We talked back and forth, and I ended up coming out to the Legacy Conference, and we just kind of built from there. And I met Tom out there at that, met Pfluger, met those guys. There's a bunch of dudes that literally just love this job. And I'm blessed. Matt Garcia, I don't know if you know that name. He worked for MV, works for No Quit Writ. Matt's about as passionate as it comes. Well, I relieve him in the morning, that kind of stuff. So I'm surrounded by this, and it is beautiful. Second to that, and I'm a little long in the tooth to this. I'm 44 years old, and I started back over as a probie. So I walked in the door, and I've used the term multiple times. I had a little bit easier time as a probie. The most people is one, I'm used to setting expectations and that kind of stuff, but I love doing this. I get to go do the backseat stuff now. I get like, man, I got no responsibilities now. Go pull a line and go fight fire. It's cake. It's a beautiful thing in that aspect. But I've been fighting and working with that almost borrowed credibility because I came in, I'd been a previous officer. They know my resume, that kind of stuff. So they know the things I've done, but I haven't done them here. So I have had an easier time in some aspect of, and they're not hammering me. I'm not the 20-year-old that they're like, "Hey, broom, get in here and clean the bathroom." But I'll go clean. I do whatever. I enjoy doing that. I make a game out of it. And I'm just that idea of I should be first up. I'm going to outwork you regardless of whatever it is. So I enjoy doing that side of it. I turn it into a game. And I hope, I think it has in a lot of ways, some of the guys that work with me, I'm trying to make it so it's fun to come to work. If we can go train, do a little bit, we make a competition. That kind of stuff, let's do that. Now, obviously, I'm not in quite the same influential to establish training programs, that kind of stuff. So it's a little bit different, and I'm having to play the game, if that makes sense, on how to do that. So that's a balancing act, but I'm enjoying it. It's great. I'm riding the tailboard of life, so.
Quick question to ask you, because I'm sure somebody out there, somebody that's listening to this is contemplating or is going through that right now. You switch departments, having to start over. It's never really easy, Because, you know, me and my wife, we talk about like certain things. She'll be like, hey, you want to move to Texas or whatever the case may be. But with you
Yes
having
or
this,
yes.
with you having to start over, how did you get your, or did you even have to get your mindset right? Like you have to start from the bottom and work your way up, prove yourself, you know, things like that. Was that a challenge?
In some ways it is. The only thing I have some hard lines that I won't cross on things. I'm going to have some differences in opinion with my officer or with my driver, those sorts of things. And as long as it's not preventing us from doing our job, I'll do it their way. I don't care. Every firefighter's got a little bit of edge, a little bit of chip on their shoulder. You have to say, I'm going to go run in that burning building over there. You have to have this idea that, man, I can go do some stuff that the normal person can't. You have to have that edge of it. But at the same time, you don't have to think that you're the smartest guy in the room. I mean, it's not that case. I work with some really good guys. I work with some guys with some experience. I work with some guys that don't have much experience. Take what you've got and fit in with that. If I can fill a gap somewhere, I'll do that. If I need to just stay in my role and be like, hey, what are we doing today? I can do that. There's times where it's a little bit tough. I'm an opinionated, talkative dude. I'm going to laugh. I'm going to joke. I'm going to carry on. But at the end of the day, it's not my call anymore. I understand the chain of command and that kind of stuff. And I've been in his spot where I've had somebody come in that had some experience that is like, well, this is the way we need to do it. Well, no, dude, this is why we're doing it this way. The whole adage that, 100 years of tradition unimpeded by progress comes into fact. I do things differently than they do. I'm used to calling an ambulance to rescue. I came from a department that transported. We don't transport. EMS is EMS, fire is fire, which is beautiful to me. I don't ever get on a box again if I can ever help it. They can't afford me. I've already made some decisions on what it would take for me to go back to the box. But it's a different place. So I'm still learning the area. I don't know the streets yet. Schertz is a hard city to learn all the streets. They're not laid out like I'm used to. I worked in Pinellas County for a long time. That's a grid system. You can teach somebody how to get around in Pinellas County in about 3 minutes. And if they get lost, they probably don't need to be doing this job. Here, you've got to learn all these streets. Nothing goes straight, nothing goes the way you think it does. San Antonio's got these loop systems that still don't make sense to me. I can find my way around, and I'm using GPS to drive home sometimes. So it's a different ball game. They do things different than I do. So it's learn that game. And it's not really a game. It's what can I learn from them too? If they do it this way, what's the why on doing that? If they've got a better why on doing that, sure, let me adapt to that. Or if not, figure out how to have that respectful conversation. Say, hey, I see why you're doing it this way. Have you ever contemplated A, B, and C? That's where some of the benefit of being an older guy with some years on comes in. They don't look at me like the shut up kid, but at the same time, I need to not just push that. So I'm having to do that balancing act.
All right, well said. I totally understand everything that you just said. Awesome. Okay. As far as you said you're 44, as far as like starting over with the physical requirements, was that an issue or were you like I got this?
I was fine with that. The only thing I was worried about, everybody talks about it's Texas, it's going to be hot. So I started in June of 23 out here. And I'm sitting here thinking, man, it is going to be hot. And talking to people, they're like, man, the humidity's high out here, all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, cool, this is going to be a ball buster all summer. I'm coming in probie school and all this kind of stuff, and it's going to be hot. I think it was the third day I was there. It was 107 and I wasn't sweating. And I'm like, cool. The humidity is not as hot as what I'm used to. I'm used to 90% humidity in Central Florida. It may be hotter here, but it doesn't feel as hot. So that, but yeah, I've had some surgeries. I've had some injuries through the years. So I have to be cognizant of my body. But I also have had to take into that account that, man, they're not only hiring me for my body anymore, they're hiring some of it for what's in my brain. So I do come with some big city experience. I've had different things along those lines that they can utilize. So try to think of that total package. Yes, I may not be what I was at 25 years old or even 30, but at the same time, I'm not out of shape. I've been a student of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for years. I do that kind of stuff. I don't run, I can tell you that. That's not going to happen. If I'm running, you should run too. Something big is chasing us or whatever. But I'll row, I'll do different things like that. I'm going to get my cardio in somehow, but I'm not a huge workout guy, but I'm also blessed genetically in that sense. My dad was a track athlete. I came from some pretty good lines on that. I work on my days off building decks, doing whatever. So I'm physically active the whole time. I just may not follow some of the more traditional workout routes, some of the guys who stay in shape.
Okay.
And I still love my, they laugh at me. I do drink my Red Bull and have my Cosmic Brownie every morning for breakfast. And they look at me like I'm an idiot, but you know, that's, it's worked for me. I'm the same weight as I was when I started in the fire academy in 02. So.
Okay. All right. With that being said, first kind of official question, the term aggressive, what does that mean to you?
Oh man, there's that gets thrown around so much. And I think it depends. Are we talking an aggressive tactic or are we talking an aggressive firefighter? An aggressive tactic, that's one thing. That is us setting ourselves up so that we can push, so that we can have some type of advance on this versus just sitting back and being reactive to it. For that aggressiveness in a firefighter, I think that's simply maximizing our potential. So aggressive for you, aggressive for me, and aggressive for somebody else is going to be a complete different answer if we look at it that side. We train and we talk about using a crawl, walk, run mentality in training. You may not be at the run stage on item A, and I'm at the crawl stage on item B. I'm going to operate as fast and as good as I can on that skill level in that, and you're going to do it at a different speed than I am. You're going to be more aggressive with it because you've got the training, you've got the experience and everything else on this particular item that I don't have. So my aggressive on that may not look quite as aggressive as yours does, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it really comes down to a mindset that, well, I will push as hard as I know how to push hard on. If I know how to do this better than anybody else, my aggressive level on that should be up here. If I am down here, I need to take into account that I don't go too fast, too hard for where my training is. So as we grow and we progress, that aggression level raises, but it's really not. It's more a reflection of your skill level and your commitment to providing that service.
Okay. All right. And as far as aggressive firefighter.
Man, that, I forget who it was, the FDNY, I'm going to butcher the quote. There was a guy talking about that we can teach you how to do this job. We can't teach you how to have the balls to it. You give us somebody with some balls, we'll teach them how to do this job. And I think it comes down to it. Most of us walking in this, we're going to save the world. We want to do stuff. We want to go to fires. We want to do this kind of stuff. And sometimes that wanes as the time goes past. And a lot of that, I think, is a reflection of the person hasn't learned how to do that properly. They think, man, I'm going to do this. They're on that knowledge curve on the way up, and they just plateau at a certain level, and they never push on that. An aggressive firefighter to me is going to be somebody that's a student of the game, that are going to study this. They're going to want to learn more of it. I use the adage that I've been serving since breakfast for stuff, and I have. I'm learning stuff every day. I'm serving the community, and I've only been doing it today. So what I've had previously is what I'm basing it off of, but I need to learn more to get me that next step on this shift, next shift, in between going to conferences, staying engaged, podcasts, books, everything else, doing the physical work that I need to do to keep myself in shape to do this job, learning how to be uncomfortable in gear, learning my equipment better than anybody in the world knows it, so that when it is blackout dark, I can do this with my eyes closed upside down in the rain when it's 100 degrees and the wind's blowing, you know, that kind of stuff. And it comes down to me as a matter of integrity. If someone has integrity, they're going to put in that work. They're going to be honest about things. They're going to do the things that need to be done, honestly assessing where they're at and realize, hey, man, I've got gaps in what I'm doing here. I need to work on that. So I think aggressiveness really is a matrix that shows the integrity someone has towards their job.
Love it. I like the answer. Okay. With that being said, I usually try to always have the guests talk about their department. So if you don't mind, can you tell us the size of shirts, how many stations, what you guys have planned for the future? Are you ALS, BLS, things like that?
So we are officially, we have a couple paramedics. We have ALS equipment on our engines. Ladder truck has, everything has that. But we don't truly run ALS. Shirts Fire, you know, we're just northeast of San Antonio. San Antonio is growing majorly, and we're no different than that. So we had population in the 40s, 40,000, depending on what you look. Some says 40,000, some says 50,000. It's anywhere, and there's who's guess what shirts proper is, what people are counting it, and that kind of stuff. We are a three station department currently. A fourth station is in the planning stage. They've got blueprints drawn up. We have the apparatus for it. There's going to be promotions done, all that kind of stuff. We have promotions in October, but should start putting pieces together to have that fully functional. So we have three engines and a truck company. And there'll be a couple more stations over the next couple of years, but we're in a very unique location. San Antonio is one of the fastest growing cities in America, and that's spilling out into us as well. So you're looking at the possibility of a 40% growth in our city between now and 2030, according to some projections. We're going to be behind the eight ball. We're only running between 5,000 and 6,000 calls a year out of three houses right now. We run backup for EMS. Schertz EMS is its own entity. They've got, I think, seven or nine ambulances are on the road that cover Schertz, some of the surrounding areas and that kind of stuff. And they're busier than we are because they're the transport company. They've got all that kind of stuff. So we are supporting them in that aspect. Our fire volume is not that high. We don't fight a ton of fire. But when we do, some of our response times are a little bit pushed on that. Sometimes, yeah, we're on 4 minutes if you're in the downtown area, but like my area, we could have a 10-minute response time to get to it. You get out to station three, I'm on station two out on the I-35 corridor. Station three, which is our hazmat house, is out towards the Interstate 10 side of it. They've got areas where they're going to have a 15-minute response time, and they're going to be operating by themselves for an extended period, waiting on mutual aid from City Converse, Cibolo, our units to come out from downtown, that kind of stuff, and get over there. So it's a very, we've got a mix of things. We've got a very rural urban interface. We don't really have high rise or anything. We've got some mid rise, five story, that kind of stuff, but nothing crazy. And as we grow, it's going to be a lot bigger bedroom community than it was. So we're going to have a lot of residential out here. We do have some industry. We've got a huge Amazon warehouses, Cisco food plants, all that kind of stuff. So we have a good mix of what we're doing, but it's a growth thing. Our chief is relatively new with the department. We're undergoing some growing pains with that. Everybody does. If the chief comes in, they're going to change things. So you've got the old guard that looks like, "Hey man, why are we doing this?" I don't know the guy real well personally. I think he's trying to do some good things. We'll see. I don't know. It is what it is, but it's that long game of where we're going to be. We're going to end up in the next 10 years, probably six stations. I would say our call volume is going to be over 10,000 a year, somewhere in that aspect. We run our staffing, we can run four if everybody's there. Like my station, if all of us are there, we actually have five people, which proves interesting because I've only got four seats on the truck. So let's figure out what we're going to do on there, and somebody will float and that kind of thing. But as that goes, I think we'll drop our staffing back down to three per unit until we can build that back up and go. And they're pretty proactive. Our city, so we have an association, not truly a union. We have no collective bargaining agreement. We work for a city that takes pretty good care of us. We earn more than a lot of the areas around us do. They seem to take care of us. And as long as that continues, man, we're blessed in that aspect. They're looking at the future and trying to plan for it. We're a little bit behind the eight ball on that fourth station getting on there so that as the growth explodes, we'll be able to do that. But our neighbor's doing the same thing. We were talking about Cibolo earlier. They're looking at a fourth station, and we run that seamless system with them. So realistically, I may only have three units responding, but I really have the availability of six units responding, plus mutual aid from other departments around.
Okay. All right. And if I first do structural box drops in Schertz's first do, I'm assuming you're getting all three stations?
Most of the time, it may not, depending on its location. They literally run it proximity based. So
Okay.
depending on where it is, it could be one Schertz engine with our battalion chief, a couple of Cibolo trucks. We may have Selma, some of the other cities around there. We do run some good proximity. But yeah, typically we're sending all three of ours in the city if we can, or they may be out on another call. We have a lot of calls that take extended period because we service the interstates. We service I-10 and I-35. You know as well as I do, anybody out on the interstate, you're there for an hour, guaranteed. We got to get tow trucks. We got to get all this blocking. We may have two units out there using them as blocking. So we may have a depleted response at that time. That's why that mutual aid and that automatic aid helps us out so much.
Okay. And you did say you had ALS equipment, but most of the time BLS is a requirement.
Oh, yeah. So we're all EMTs at a minimum. We've got some EMT basic is the majority. That's me. I'm not one of those fancy paramedic guys. We do have a couple of EMTIs, the intermediate, that can do certain things. And I think we only on the department have two, maybe three paramedics.
Okay.
They get a little stipend. They can do some more things under the medical director that I can't do. And we have the equipment for them to do that.
Okay. All right. And with the growth of shirts that the city's seeing, you did mention your four station is comes with promotions. Are you intending on promoting, or are you good where you're at for right now?
So that's a loaded question, but I like it. I walked in the door here with the intention of, man, I was going to ride backseat for the rest of my career. I'm looking at another 15, 18 years of doing this, try to retire at 60, maybe around that age, depending on my body, depends on what holds up. So I have to look at the longevity of that. Do I, at 58 years old, am I going to be able to be a backseat firefighter anymore? Do I need to start looking at that kind of stuff? There's really no way for me to promote right now, though. So we have requirements that you have to be with the department for 2 years to be able to eligible to test for our, we call them FAOs, apparatus operators, a chauffeur, to be a driver. So I can step up. I can be a backup driver once I get through that, but that hasn't even really been a priority for me. I'm enjoying riding backwards. I'm still trying to learn the city, trying to learn the way that they do things. So I feel like I can do. You can put me on any fire apparatus in any seat in America and I can function. You put me in the driver's seat, you put me in the officer seat, I'll be fine. I enjoyed the officer side of it. I really did. I feel like that was probably the best fit for it, but that, man, that's not my path right now. That's not where I'm at. Do I want to do that eventually? Sure, but I'm in no hurry. I'm in no rush to do that. And a lot of that depends on the climate of the department. If certain things are not happening in the way that it does, that I look at it as almost, I won't say force my hand, but make me look at, all right, I need to start promoting. I need to start doing that so I can help facilitate that change. As long as we've got the people doing that, I've got no problem riding backwards. So, I mean, yes, you obviously deal with the economics of it. Yeah, I could promote. I could try to go get a raise, that kind of stuff. Sure, that's the wrong reason to promote. Absolutely wrong reason. If you're just chasing a paycheck, that's not the reason to do it. I'm happy with what I'm doing. I don't say never, but I don't say that I won't. So I guess that's
Gotcha.
the answer on that.
Okay. And so, with you being or have been a company officer and you're now a backstep, how do you feel on like where some company officers want their firefighters to be dialed in? They want them to be able to know how to do the job and things of that nature. But with you now going back to being in the back, do you feel like company officers also need to step up and show, hey, it's not just my firefighter can throw ladders? Like, just because you get promoted, does that mean you can lack in that skill because you're kind of solely relying on your backseat?
My personal opinion on that is if my guys are working, I'm working, and I'm probably trying to work harder than they are. I used to tell my probies when they would come in, is I expect you to work at least as hard as I work. If I'm working, you better be working, and you better be trying to work as hard as I am. I also tell them too, so I want them to know when I was the officer, I want them to know that I was so dialed in that they could trust me, that they had the freedom to make mistakes. That they could try stuff, that they could push on that. And I always told them, I'm like, man, if you see something, tell me. I may not be saying it. I may not take it into consideration. I really may not. This may be a guy with 5 months on that's looking at us like, gee, or hey, LT, that looks dangerous. It is. I've always told my guys, man, I will put you in some sketchy shit, but know that I'm doing it for a reason. I'm not going to do it for no reason, but I'm going to be right there beside you and we're going to be okay. I can't promise you I'm gonna send you home. We're gonna do some sketchy stuff sometimes. I've worked in departments where I had limited staffing. My previous department on this, I was an officer. I was covering 432 square miles on an engine that had me and one other person on it.
Wow.
My closest backup was probably a volunteer that may not know how to run the pump. They may have some water on the truck. It's gonna be a good old boy in a pickup. My closest paid station was 25 minutes away. I had response times up to 30 minutes on stuff for me to even get there. So yeah, we're gonna do some sketchy stuff. I'm gonna put you in some dangerous situations, and I'm gonna do my best to keep you safe. But that was not always a guarantee. I needed you to be trained and be able to, that I could trust you, so that when I tell you, hey, I'm going in this, I need you to get the deck gun going over here. I'm going in by myself because screw two out. we're going to go do some stuff and I need to know that you've got my back. But I needed to give them the freedom so that they could make their mistakes and they could learn. I'm a big proponent of, yeah, we need to train to failure, but we don't need to train to fail. If we have those failures, we can get that learning aspect out of it. I know I've learned more from my mistakes than I ever have from any of my victories. So getting these guys to trust you is a big deal. The only way they're going to learn to trust you is by seeing you out there doing this stuff. You're out here getting it just with them, and I'm tweaking this technique and saying, hey, this is the way I do it. You don't have to do it the way that I'm doing it. This is a way of doing this. My body type and your body type are different. Remember, I had a female probie that was 5'1" for a little while. She could not get the damn ladder off of our engines. She couldn't. It was a physical impossibility. We had the ladder actually came down. She couldn't get this ladder off and high shoulder this thing to save her life. It wasn't that she didn't try. It wasn't that she was physically incapable of doing these things. And the fact that she wasn't strong enough is she's 5'1". That ladder rack is above my shoulder when I'm standing up and I'm just shy of 6 foot tall. She could not physically get it. She had to drag the thing down, let it drop, pick it back up, and go from there. Is working with them so that they trust themselves to get on there and that they trust you that one, I'm not going to scream at you. I'm not going to yell at you for not being able to do it the same exact way as I am. I frankly don't care how you do it as long as you get the job accomplished. So we're going to give you the tools and equip you to do that kind of stuff.
Okay, I love the answer. Okay, all right. I'm gonna move on to let me see. I want to hit on leadership with you because you've been a company officer, and so this question I'm gonna ask you because you're in Texas, so I'm wanting to see if you're gonna be tracking where I'm going with this. There's a department in Texas that had a recent fire,
Fort
pretty
Worth.
big. Yes, sir. Pretty big
I'll
department.
name it. I'm okay with that.
Okay. I just want your thoughts on it because from everything that I've gathered, everything that I've read, I feel like as a chief of department, regardless of what happened, what didn't happen, what should have happened, whatever the case may be, if you have an injured member that's in a hospital, I mean, how hard is it to go see that individual? Like, that's like the least you could do, because that technically that is one of your members of your he, that individual is putting your organization on his back. Like, he works for you. So what's your thoughts on not only that, but what's your thoughts on leadership in general? Like, what does true leadership look like?
So I'll touch the Fort Worth thing. That is absolutely an abomination of what happened. That guy should hang his head and never show his face in public again. That's Philip Moore's opinion on that. That does not reflect anybody else's opinion but mine. I think he's a coward, and I think that he literally does not understand what this job is if that's his position on there. That I'm unhappy that you did something that I think is personally dangerous. Well, I'm not there. I don't have every aspect of it. I think back to Danny Dwyer in Atlanta. I had the opportunity to go to a conference with him back in 22 in Birmingham, the Deep South Conference. Went with him, got to talk to him a little bit. The guy literally says, I don't know that I'd make the same decision that I made on the next fire if the same thing presented. He did what he thought was best based with a percentage of information that he could obtain. We never have the whole picture. I know as the company officer, I want all that information. And my biggest job is processing information in a rapid manner to come up with some type of decision to give us the tactical advantage over this event. He went with what he thought was the best thing to do in that time. Was it the best thing? I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't have all those answers on there. What I know is he went in and he tried to save somebody's life that did eventually die. I look back at the Fort Worth thing. They got injured. They were doing their job. Based off the information that they had at that time, you have to step forward and you make a decision to either act or not act. That chief not backing them up is a sign of a lack of trust in them. It's just like we were talking about earlier when you're training a new guy, training that kind of stuff, to develop that trust, I have to trust them as well. I have to trust my subordinates are going to act in the best interest of our people. The old adage of mission, men, me comes to mind. The mission first. What I will tell these guys, I'll put you in some sketchy spots. I'm going to go do some dangerous stuff with you. I can't guarantee you to come home. If we're accomplishing our mission, I have zero problem risking you at that point. I don't want you to get hurt. That's one of the biggest fears I had riding that seat, was I don't get to send one of these guys home in the morning. But the mission comes first. It's not about me. It's not about my crew. It's not about what we're going to go eat dinner later on and can we go play pickleball or whatever. It's about, we have a call. Once that bell rings, we're on their time. The time it takes for me to get to the truck, to get dressed out, the response time, pulling that line, masking up at the door, forcing the door, whatever it is, whatever that task is, throwing that ladder, doing the search, I am on somebody else's time. It doesn't belong to me. I am now a public servant. And yes, that goes kind of hand in hand with probably the leadership aspect of it. I'm a huge proponent for servant leadership. I had it described years ago as the string theory of leadership. If I lay a piece of string out on a table and I put my finger on one end of that string and I start pushing it, it's not really going to go where I want it to go. It's going to be all limp and not really go. If I'm at the front of that string and I put my finger on it and I start pulling it, it's going to go where I want it to go. The aspect of that is you've got to be out there in the trenches and doing that. You've got to be putting in the work yourself for them to, one, trust you, and two, so that you know you can trust them. It comes down to, I haven't done the work as a leader. If I'm second guessing them to make sure that they have the tools they need to make that decision on their own. Old Smoothbore Cartel talks about independent operators, having those guys that can make a decision. If they've made a decision, I may come back to them and have a coachable moment. That, hey, did you consider this, this, and this? That's not a disciplinary act. That's not a punitive thing. That is a learning experience. That's how we get better, is we make our mistakes. We talk about this. Yes, does sometimes discipline come out of that? Sure, we have to. We're an organization that has to have rules, has to have regulation, has to have that sort of thing. Nobody wants to start stroking paper just because somebody made a decision. As soon as you do that, you're going to have gun-shy firefighters who don't do anything, that don't make a decision, that are going to be sitting back, am I getting in trouble for this? That shouldn't be the idea. The idea should be, can I accomplish this task? That's it. Anything more than that, we're not serving the public.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to get your two cents on it. Love the answer. And you're right. I kind of feel like with the chief not visiting the injured member, and this could, I could be wrong, but just my opinion, I think subconsciously, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that firefighter now starts questioning, like, damn, did I do the wrong thing by trying to, you know, do my job? Because with the fire chief not showing up to just check on him, to me, you know, that's kind of putting that little sublingual message in your head of shit, like, I guess I did something wrong. You know what I mean? Even well, though
what's our priority
job? Exactly.
What is our priority? You learn from the very start of the fire academy that our three main jobs, life preservation or life safety, hazard mitigation, property conservation. He was acting on the aspect of life safety, which is our number one edict. Mm-hmm. That is our number one thing we're here for. So, you know, get in there, search the whole occupiable space. Is it fully involved? Is it not? Survivable space, all that kind of stuff. It's a non-question. Now, are there times we cannot go in that building? You bet your ass are. That thing is blowing. Yeah, we can't get in that. That is a suicide mission, and we know it. But I bet people look a little bit differently if it's their kid inside of there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing. It's treating this call like it's my emergency. I hate that phrase. Well, it's not my emergency. It's not my emergency. No, it is my emergency. No, it's not me that's under that, but it's my emergency now because it's my job to manage this emergency. Everything that happens on there is my responsibility now. So that's just my two cents.
Okay. All right. Realistic training on a small budget. I'm not sure how much money Shirts, you know, puts in their training budget, but what are some of the things you guys do to give your members realistic training?
So back in, I think it was April when we ran it, we brought in No Quit RIT for our guys. It's a week of RIT training. It's that kind of stuff. We send our people to conferences, but a lot of times we back off and we'll only sit them in for the lectures, that kind of stuff. It's kind of a money saving thing. And our training chief, I love the guy to death. I think he's got some good ideas on things, but I think he does hamper us a little bit on some of this, and the fact that he'll be like, oh, you've got, I've heard the quote directly, oh, you got Philip and you got Matt. They can teach you how to do that. So we'll run some in-house things, but we haven't necessarily fully fleshed that out yet and got it so that we're doing everything on that fully. And I think it's coming. I do. I think there's plans on us having a much more robust training schedule and regimen for the department overall in utilizing members that we have that have experience in A, B, or C to do that kind of stuff. But it's just not fully fleshed out yet. So now it really kind of comes down to the company officer or that driver or that crew itself being willing to put in the time and do that kind of thing. It's not that they can't do it. It's just it's not fully fleshed out yet. And that's okay. It's a growing process. Would I like to see more of it? You bet it. I enjoy doing stuff. I used to keep a year-long training calendar for my company. That this is what we did. You had theme days, basically, so that each day of the week corresponded with a certain type of skill set we're going to work on. They knew that going into it so that they could be prepared mentally so that we're not just springing stuff on, because God forbid you tell a firefighter we're going to train on something, didn't give them a heads up. But, you know, because that's how the emergencies do too. They say, hey, tomorrow you're going to have a structure fire that's going to have a balcony and you're going to actually have to fight fire up that and advance the hose, because that's how that happens. But no, we're creatures of habit. Nobody wants to look stupid during training. So people want to think about it ahead of time and get an idea. All right, this is what I'm doing. And I understand that. I've been in that spot too. Nobody wants to look stupid. So it's getting past that idea of that, hey man, we have to have everything come from the top down on the way that the training is going to run. It could be as simple as, hey man, I'm going to race you masking up today. I don't need equipment for that. I don't need a big budget for that. We're going to throw some ladders on the side of the station. After we, you know, throw a gear on, the driver's going to pull around. He's going to set the parking brake. When that happens, the two backseat guys are going to go to search or going to go to the roof or whatever it is. Set the truck up. Get that rep in. Fire alarms are one of the best things to me in the world to train on. You go to a fire alarm, you realize nothing's happening. You've got everybody here. We're already on scene. No, I don't have to pull every piece of equipment off the truck. Go ahead and set that truck up. Go ahead and put people there. Let the guy that was going to be feeding the standpipe or the FDC, go ahead and make that connection. It's a dry run. It's a dry rep. It doesn't take much time. We're back in service in a matter of minutes, and we're good on that. You don't have to have a huge budget, all these props and everything to accomplish some good stuff. Estimating that stretch, you know, different things like that. You can take at one point I had basically construction twine on a roll that I carried for a little while, and we would do our pre-connects off of that. Instead of us pulling a pre-connect on a call, we could hook that onto the side of the pump panel, and we'd pull our 200-foot pre-connect out here so we see where it is. I had four colors of string on there. Every 50 feet, it changed colors so that you'd see where each section would end up at. All right, cool. Now we got a visual of that. Roll it back up, get back in service, and we're gone. You know, those kind of things are very simple, very easy to accomplish. And if you can turn it into a game, firefighters are going to love it. We had at one point where we would do stuff for, all right, you're going to clean the toilet if you're the slowest on this one, or you got to clean up after dinner, or that kind of stuff. And just make it simple. You don't have to have every day is a ball buster. We don't have to go out here and pull 300 foot of line, throw 75 ladders, go force the door over and over and over again. But we need those days. And we can plan those days into it, but every day you can get a little bit of something accomplished.
Yeah. All right. With that being said, what is your opinion on outside training?
I love it.
Okay.
Absolutely love it. So I did not do it at one point in my career. I was on the job, but I wasn't into the job for a long mm-hmm. time. I worked at a fairly busy firehouse that we didn't train. And some of it was we had some older guys there that were pretty damn good at their job, and they would show you anything, but you had to kind of go to them and ask them to show stuff. And once you did, they'd show you anything in the world, but it wasn't going to be a super hands-on, super there. But they also took every fire we ran. That was a training opportunity for them. You know, never forget a gentleman by the name of Wayne showing me, hey, don't stand right here. Get in this doorway right here. If that ceiling comes down, you're protected by that. Just little things. They would take you under the wing and teach you as we went. It was very much an on-the-job style training of that. We had a big training department. We did all kinds of things. But so far at that company level, that was more the way that went. And you can do a lot of stuff that way. But at the same time, if you get some type of structure so that we know this hour of the day, we're going to try to do this unless we're on a call, people get used to it. And as soon as they get in that routine, they start doing it. So I don't know. It's we overcomplicated a lot. Oh, I just lost volume with you. My apologies. Can you still hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay, I got you again. I got you now.
Okay.
I don't know what happened. It glitched for a minute.
Yeah, glitch. It's all good. What was it like when you first went to your first training conference?
Eye-opening. Realized how bad I was at this job. Realized these guys are getting after it. They care. They give a shit. And that was a very eye-opening experience. I liken that. I grew up, my dad is a Southern Baptist pastor. So I grew up going to church camps, different stuff like that. It's like the church camp experience. You come back, you're all fired up for the Lord. Let's go. And you come back from these conferences, man, you're energized. You're around these people that are dialed in, that are doing their very best every day. And you don't always have that around you. You've got guys that are not in the job, that are only thinking about their second job. They're running their side business. This is where they rest at. They're only running a couple calls. Let me get all my stuff done. Let me do the books for my job, all that kind of stuff. That's okay. That is, they can do that, but that's not the guy I'm going to look to be my number one guy. And there's going to be that at any department. Not everybody's going to be into it the whole time. Not everybody's going to buy in. But you're surrounding yourself with these people that are. Secondary to that, you've got deviation of things that happens. Like we have three stations, three shifts. We run 48-96. We have nine different departments, truly, if you really look at it. Every shift does stuff different. Every station does stuff different. So you're only surrounded by your thing. You get basically accustomed. This is the way we do things here. And you don't see the way other people do that. And it comes down to, are you teachable? Can I take something from them? And they may be teaching the dumbest thing in the world, and I may learn that, hey, I don't want to do that. That's okay. I learned something from it. It's like the old adage that you learn the most from a good officer and from a bad officer. Either way, you're learning something from them. It's how I don't want to be or how I do want to be. Same kind of concept. You're surrounding your guys with the environment that you create. When you step outside of that, it's going to have some type of benefit, whether it's learning, hey, we're doing pretty good on these things, but we're pretty shitty on this. Maybe we need to adapt that. It's the old travel enriches life idea. I live in San Antonio. There's all kind of fun things to do here, see that kind of stuff. That doesn't mean I want to go to Utah. I don't want to go to California. I don't want to see things there that are different than what I see. It doesn't mean I appreciate what I have any less. It just means I'm seeing something different. It's getting a different idea, a different perspective. And if I can meld those things together, then I'm going to be more rounded.
Okay. And I love how you put it because that's exactly how I felt. Like when I attended my first conference, it was like I was a decent performer, but until you truly like sit there and watch people and listen to them talk, and then you start acquiring skills, and it's just like, damn, how come I didn't know that? Or like,
Right.
yeah, that's a really good idea. Like it definitely changes. It changes your mindset, and it just made me want to be a lot better than I was. Because you get comfortable, you do get complacent, and so I remember, dude, like I said, man, when I attended my first one, and it's the first 2 days of a lecture, and you're listening to chiefs and captains and firefighters talk with like, this is how it needs to be, and you're just like, damn, like I've been that guy in a way,
Right.
you know what I mean? And it's eye-opening.
Yeah. People enjoy professional sports. I think I'll use this analogy for it. People enjoy watching professional sports. And a lot of them were former athletes. They were a high school ball player, let's say a high school basketball player. They're watching the NBA now. They appreciate the level of performance of these guys. Now, they're no longer in the sports world themselves where they're going to take this skill that this guy does and apply it to something, but they appreciate it. We can appreciate what these guys do. We can appreciate the brilliance of somebody that's fully invested in this game that has mastered their craft. It's up to us then, are we still engaged in this sport to apply that? You look at a high school kid trying to get a scholarship somewhere, they're going to go to camps. They're going to go work out with professionals. They're going to go work out and do things that are different than what just their coach is saying. Well, that coach is my fire chief. My fire chief says, we're going to run these plays. We're going to run these drills. We're going to do that. We're going to run some stuff to better you personally, but we're looking at a more of a team approach over here. I'm not building that individual truly, if it comes down to it. That's where those summer camps come into the thing on that. We're doing the same thing. We're industrial athletes. I've heard that term thrown around here. Same kind of idea. We're going to go learn this skill set that betters me, that gets me better able to perform my job. Now, am I going to have a benefit on somebody else? Sure, you bet your ass off. If I know how to do this three different ways and they know how to do it two different ways and I've mastered all three of them, I'm going to be a more rounded player than they are. It gives me a skill set that I can draw from on there. And if we can get more of that, and don't send your guys all to the same conference. Mm-hmm. Don't send 15 guys to this conference. Send three of them. Let them bring it back to you. And I think that's what we were talking about earlier with our training chief kind of trying to take that approach. Yeah, send a couple of guys to this one. Let them get that piece of information. Now we can make it our own. We can turn this into something for our people. And are we going to take everything? No. I'm not going to go apply the response model from Chicago or Los Angeles or New York to the city of Church. We're not going to have the same response model. It's not going to happen. So, yes, I can't do all of the things they do there, but I can take the pieces that apply to us, and we can dial ourselves in a little bit more.
Okay. All right. Your last department, what schedule did you guys work?
Oh, we were 24/48 with 7,000 hours of Mando every week. It was rough.
Okay. So you're now working a 48/96. So in your professional opinion, I'm asking you, Philip Moore, between the two, which one is better for you, for your home life?
For me, I love the 48/96. I genuinely do. I like going in, but I understand I'm not working for a busy department that's getting murdered. Mm-hmm. I don't have guys that are running 25 transports in a 24-hour window. I don't have that. I see how it could be problematic for some places. It's not the end-all be-all for everybody. You have to have a measure in place to protect your guys from the schedule itself. I see the benefit of it. I'm enjoying it. I love this 48/96. But even with that, I'm only 14 months into working this schedule. My body still thinks every 3 days I'm supposed to be going to work. So it still hasn't quite done that. But I've also run a 24/48 for a long time. Mm-hmm. So the clean transition that really hasn't completely carried over. I see the benefits to it, but I also don't think there's any one size fits all for the fire department. It's just like we were talking about tax-wise. No, I'm not going to take FDNY's stuff and apply it to shirts because it's a different animal. What works for us is this 48/96. It's a beautiful thing. What works for the next department next door may not for in the same aspect. And you have to take that into account, your people and what you're actually doing.
Okay. And I have to agree with you. Like, you know, firemen tend to embellish on some things. You know what I mean? Like, If you're like you said, if you're getting murdered with calls, whether you're on the engine, a truck, or you run a rescue or an ambulance, yeah, that's a whole different thing. But if at most, if you run between 5 and 9 calls a shift, like doing it for 48, because that's the thing, like every shift's different. Like, you know what I mean? Like I work tomorrow. We may run 7 calls tomorrow. We may run 0. And if we're on that 48/96 schedule, you know, we have to me, it's like a day by day basis, but you know, firemen like to embellish things. We like to what if certain things. And it's just like, so I just wanted to get your perspective on it since you've worked both.
And you need to have an administration that is dialed in too. If you have one station that is busier than another, mm-hmm. you can't handle them the exact same way. You can't. If you have a station that predominantly runs all their calls overnight and you want them up at 7 a.m. to go do pub eds and everything else on their second day, you're setting them up for failure. You're not letting them get their proper downtime. If you have it that, hey, guys, we got to be out of bed at 7 a.m. regardless, let that officer have that discretion. Let that officer be able to take care of his guys and say, hey, dude, go to bed. Stay in bed. We're not doing anything this morning. We're going to rest unless the call drops. We're not going to get up until whatever time, and that's okay. But you run into the administrative side of it. Daytime, that's when they're there. They don't want to come in, and they don't want to see guys in the bed. They don't want to see that. Because I understand it. What they're not seeing is that overnight period.
Right. Right.
We're not a very night-heavy station. I'm not. We'd run now our last couple of shifts. We've run a couple after midnight. But before that, we had not run anything after midnight in a month.
Okay.
We're running daytime calls. That
Right.
was just the way it was. So yeah, we could get up at 6:30, go to a pub bed at 7:30, whatever it needed to be on day two, not a big deal. You look at our station one, they run most of their calls overnight. So yeah, you're setting them up for failure if you do that. That has everything to do with that leadership of being dialed into what's actually going on.
Love it. Love the message. And like you said, I think everything's on a case by case basis. But yes, we need to have an administration that understands things. And also the firemen need to understand things too. Like, if you're at a slow house, yeah, it's probably not wise to be in bed,
No.
still it's 10 o'clock the next shift and you're still in bed. And it's like you ran zero. Like, there's ways the chiefs are going to be able to look at if you've ran anything.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, give and take. Okay. Okay. All right. I want to hit on this topic: wellness and truly being there for one another. The term brotherhood gets thrown around a lot, and granted, there are some individuals that truly mean that, but then too, there are some people that use that as a gimmick or catchphrase or whatever the case may be. So, your opinion on, like, it's easy for someone to say, "Hey, man, if you need me, call me," and then you call them, they never answer. You're always getting a voicemail or
Right.
whatnot. So, what does that mean to you for everything that you've gone through to get to where you're at now?
So, friends are a big deal. As you develop in this career, you're going to have friends. What that looks like is going to be completely different. Again, that whole case by case. Figuring out that your guys need a work-life balance. Like during COVID time, what's going on when you had these guys that are working 96 hours straight, getting hammered, go home for one day, they're beat down, they're ready to, they're just running to sleep. They don't see their family, that sort of stuff. Having some type of work-life balance on that. Secondary to that is actually meaning that. I can say I care about you all day, but if I don't show it, it doesn't really matter. Is understanding where your guys are at, looking at your crew member in the eye and looking like, man, he's been fighting his old lady for the past 3 weeks. He's worn down. What can I talk to him about? Now, I'm not the guy to give marriage advice. I'm apparently have shown I'm not real good at the whole marriage thing a couple times. But being there for them so that they can do that. We're dudes. I say we're dudes. The majority of the fire service is a bunch of guys. Guys are typically known for bottling those emotions up. We're not allowed to have emotions. You don't cry. You don't this. You don't that. You don't talk about your problems. You just suck it up and move forward. Well, we're seeing how that doesn't pay out. We're seeing all these suicides. We're seeing everything that goes on in the fire service. Chronic alcoholism, hypersexualization, drug use, blah, 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 tobacco use, everything that goes hand in hand with that. And some of that is our own making. We celebrate that culture of that guy is he's out here partying hard, he's doing everything else. He comes to work, he shows up. What we may not be taking into account is he's just self-medicating. He's going numb so he doesn't have to fucking see anything. He doesn't have to feel anything. It's not that he's having a good damn time. He's out here self-medicating and trying to fucking forget what he's been going through for the past 15 years and recognizing the difference in that. Yeah, there's some people that, yeah, they're just going and having a good time doing this stuff, but sometimes it's a cry for help without being a cry for help. That guy that has been that solid guy that suddenly disengaged, and we just say, hey man, he's having a rough time. And he says, oh, I don't want to talk about it. I got some stuff going on. And we take him at face value for that. Let him be mad at you for a little while because you ask him again later. Let him be mad at you. That's okay. He's been mad at you through the years because you ate his cake out of the fridge or whatever. You get mad at him for something a little bit more serious that, hey man, I care about you. I want to see how you're doing. Having a group text with your guys on your days off, talking to each other, all the memes and all the other crap that gets sent, sure, that's going to happen. But we've also embraced certain things within our culture that shouldn't be embraced. That whole, yeah, he never cried. He never thought anything about it. Yeah, he buried that shit. I look back at you, look at the World War II guys. Yeah, they never talked about the crap they did overseas. My grandfather told me one story and one story only about World War II the entire time he was alive. And it was a funny story. It's the only reason he told me it because he had captured a German fire or a French fire brigade when he was going through because the uniforms looked like the Germans. When I became a firefighter, he told me that. I have no idea all the things he did. I don't know about that. I know that man carried some demons through the years. I know he was a heavy drinker for his life and that kind of stuff and different things. He was a rough man. He was a tough dude. Yeah, he didn't show emotion. He didn't do that kind of stuff. He carried all that alone. That doesn't mean that it was wrong. It doesn't mean it was right. But we have to, if we're going to use that term brotherhood, we've got to be willing to make that uncomfortable phone call that, hey, man, I know you told you don't want to talk about this. But I want to talk to you about something, and open ourselves up then. It's easier for you then if I'm like, hey, Danny, I'm having a rough time right now. You may have been trying to check, or I may be actually trying to check on you, saying, I know this guy just ran 3 pediatric calls in the last 2 weeks. He's got a kid that age. I know he's got a kid that age. I can see something's up with him, but he doesn't want to talk to me about it. When I ask him about it, he doesn't want to talk to me about it. So if I come to you with my problem, I'm sharing part of my life. We talk about that we have a second family in the fire service. We share our life with. So if I can count on you that I'm going to bring a problem to you, you may just now let me in a little bit to share part of your problem on that. Now, none of us want to share our business. None of us want to, you know, talk about our own crap. And we're looking at the other guy, man, hey, he's got some problems. Well, I guarantee you do too. So if you're willing to look at it yourself and open up to that, man, I see a counselor. I suffer from mental health stuff. I have for a long time. I didn't go get help for a long time, but I do. I go talk to a counselor. I don't hide that fact now. When I first started talking to you, nobody would have known I was talking to a counselor. Man, that shit's weak. That's for crazy people, whatever. Well, I'm now comfortable enough with that I'll let people know. Yeah, I go see a counselor. I talk to them about my problems. I talk to them about stuff that I can't talk to anybody else with. Maybe we can slowly start changing that look at the mental health aspect that, yeah, all of us are in this thing together. I can count on you to pull me out if my fucking leg's broken and I'm in a burning building, but I can't count on you if my wife's cheating on me or whatever it is. That's where we're at. Or my kids, I just caught my kids selling weed or whatever it is. Maybe not anything big, but it's big to me. I've heard the adage. I heard somebody talking about this. I have a friend of mine that I used to work with in Florida committed suicide back in 2019. I was mad. I was pissed off that he pussed out and just killed himself. I struggled with that. And then I heard, I can't think of the guy's name, he was talking about firefighters directly with it, that nobody looks poorly at a firefighter that jumps out of a window. You look back at Bloody Sunday, these guys jumping from multiple stories up to their death. Nobody looks at them as committing suicide. Nobody looks at them as they were doing anything wrong. Yes, they were running from a fire. They were getting burned up in there. That guy was getting burned up with some fire inside of him. Something was going on with him, and he literally, that was his last ditch effort. He jumped that window. Now, not physically, but he jumped out of that window trying to do something. It was his last ditch hope. Being in a position where we can talk to each other and love each other the right way is going to prevent a lot of that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's an epidemic, and man, we got a huge cultural thing on that. We make dark humor our coping mechanism. We make jokes, and I'm as guilty as anybody has ever been on that kind of stuff. I've said some of the most vile things in the world at a fire station making jokes about stuff. Realizing that's how that person's dealing with that, and that may be okay. That's how they deal with it. But that may not work for the other guy at the other end of the table, and being able to recognize that and realize it's not a one-size-fits-all. Peer support programs, those sorts of things. EAPs. Now, that EAP thing's scary. Are they reporting it back to my department? Are they all this kind of stuff? That's a scary thing on there. But having a peer support team, not a huge fan of critical incident stress debriefings where we force people to talk about it, because they may not be ready at that point.
Right.
Not a huge fan of that. But so that we can start talking about things properly. And it may not be the whole crew talking about it. It may be me and the other guy in the back seat 3 weeks later talking about this together. Like, man, this thing bothered me. I had a guy the other day tell me, he's like, that the pediatric code he ran probably 9-10 months ago still bothers him. Cool. We need to talk to him about it. Did I immediately dive into that? Now, is this something I'm going to circle back around on? You bet your ass it is. Not the right moment at that time. I'm not going to embarrass this guy. And I'm not saying it's an embarrassing thing he should be embarrassed about, but we're dudes. We're these type A, we fix things. We fix things for other people, so we don't rely on other people to help us out. And getting past that, man, I'm not a firefighter 24/7. I'm a dad. I'm a husband. I'm a whatever. I'm this guy's buddy. And being able to have that duality of life, put on a different hat that day and take care of it, we're not real good at, and we've got to get better.
Well said. Well said. Is there actually, I always kind of forget, but I try to remember before we part out, for future references, future self, where do you see yourself down the line before you retire, or where would you like to see yourself?
I don't have chief aspirations at all. That has never been there.
I don't blame you there.
I've had to ride as a battalion chief in the past. I did not enjoy that at all. That was not my cup of tea. But I also realize, man, I bring certain things to the table. I'm pretty good at A, B, and C. I may suck at D, E, and F, but I'm pretty good at A, B, and C, and I'm trying to get better at the other things. I wouldn't say huge aspirations to move into that, but I could see at one point down the line, way down in my career, maybe being in a training chief's top spot, something like that. I do enjoy all the conference stuff too, and I'd looked at some LLC stuff about previously about trying to bring my brand of firefighting to some other people, eventually. But I'm not there. I don't. When we first talked on the phone the other day, I told you that I've never had an original idea in my damn life. Everything that I do came from somebody else. So all I am is regurgitating their information and putting my little spin on it. I could see 15 years from now looking at some type of training chief position, but man, that's not really a goal. It's something, man, is that where I best serve the department? Because now I'm the old guy. I'm not the 25-year-old that you want on the line. I'm not the guy that you want going in searching the house anymore because I have aged out of that or something along those lines. So being able to still contribute to the fire service in some way that's meaningful, not just based off of a strong back and a pair of legs.
Okay. All right.
It's an adaptable answer to be a non-answer. How about that?
Hey, I'm good with it. I'm good with it. Is there anything else you want to say? Anything you want to let any of the listeners know out there, through all your experiences, so far doing this job?
Man, take care of yourself. We are our own keeper. We are our brother's keeper, but we're our own keeper. If you don't have your house in order, everything will fall eventually. You're going to make mistakes. You are going to make a ton of mistakes if you're actually doing something. The old adage that if you never have any enemies, you've never done anything is pretty true. The aspect of that is you've never made a mistake in your career, you probably aren't trying very hard. If you're just floating along and just existing and not making a mistake and not making waves, you're probably not making an impact on that. We talk about legacy. We talk about different things. It's not about having my name on something. It's knowing that I influenced it for the future generations. If you can keep that perspective, I think you'll go do some things. And that's going to require you to update yourself. That new software update every so often. All right. Well, man, I'm getting a pot belly on me a little bit. I got to change the way I'm eating something. So I'm gonna adapt and go through there. Keep that in mind. Learn as much as you can, keep yourself in shape, and enjoy the job. We have the best damn job on the planet. I don't care what anybody says. Yes, the job has changed from when I first got onto it. So damn what? It's still the best job out there. I get to go do some sketchy shit and go do some cowboy shit with my friends every couple of days. And I get to go see things that, yes, some things that we don't want to see, we don't want to talk about. That are horrible things, but I'm that stopgap from somebody else that doesn't need to see them. I go take care of it. I put that aside. There's a certain amount of honor to that, I think, and I think we've lost that. Instead of it looking as just a job, this is a calling. It really is. I don't think anybody can do this for a prolonged period at any type of success. They may climb, they may do that, but what I would count as success is that they have actually made a positive difference on there. I don't think that they don't have that drive, that passion, and try to push forward through all those things. That's just my two cents. Get good at
Amen.
this.
Amen. No, that was good. That was good. Before we leave, I want to give a shout out to Bryson Hugh for hooking this up. Bryson sent me a message. He was like, "Hey, I got a guy, I want you to reach out, see if he'll talk." And Bryson, you made this happen. So, I want to say thank you to Bryson, and thank you, Philip, for listening to my voicemail and going, okay, and then calling back, and it's like, yeah, sure, why not? Let's do this. I
Right.
think this was a great conversation. You dropped a lot of gems and nuggets for other people to pick up on, and that and you're just between you and I, we're both trying to spread positive, reaffirming messages about giving a damn about the job.
Yeah, man. I met Bryson this year. He came into town for that No Quit Rick class that was held through my department. Don't know him. Did not know this kid from anything. Came in, he was ate up, big old smile on his face, ready to go to work. had a great time with him, got to run some drills with him, do scenarios, that kind of stuff. I have no idea. I'm honored and flattered that he thought of me in any aspect of this kind of stuff. I have no idea what I did that was there, but man, I'll take it as the biggest compliment in the world that somebody saw what I was doing and liked it, and it meant something to them. And that, dude, that warms my little Grinch heart, you know, to think about that kind of stuff. So, man, Bryson, keep doing what you're doing. Can't wait to see you when I see you again. I should see you at Castillo Way in a couple weeks over in Conroy for that benefit conference. So
definitely, and that, you know, that right there, we never know as firefighters, like when we ask somebody, it can be just the simplest things of, hey, are you okay? Or, hey, would you like me to show you this? What you portray out in the world comes back tenfold. You know what I mean? Like, obviously you either did something or you instructed, or maybe it was your positive vibe and energy, but Bryson was like, hey, this guy. So, you know, that's why I tell people, like, all you have is your last name. Might want to make sure it's a good name out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like I told you, dude, I'm a nobody in the fire service. I've not created anything. I've not done anything. I do try to make a better place every shift when I go in. I try to do things that are going to help on that. But, man, if I can help one person get a love for the job, cool, I've done my job then. They are that next generation. And, you know, we just, if everybody passes on a little bit, we're going to be in a lot better place than we are right now. Not that we're in a bad spot. The fire service is growing. It's the passion's coming back. It's beautiful to see all these micro conferences popping up all over the place. It's almost an oversaturation to a degree on some of it, but man, it's beautiful to see people actually starting to take the job and love this job again. Cause I know when I first got into it, man, it was post 9/11. We were heroes. We were right. All that kind of stuff. And man, that went away for a while. And I don't care so much about the public thinking we're heroes, but our mentality's changed. We're not in here making a difference. We got a job. And yes, there's a certain workmanship thing that we need to have, a workmanlike attitude, bring your lunch pail and let's go to work. But at the same time, man, we can have fun with this. We can enjoy this. We can say to ourselves, yeah, this is a great damn job. I can love this job, and there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing wrong with loving this. And man, I hope that spreads to everybody. Do I think everybody will? No. You're going to have people in any job that don't get into it. All right. I'm probably not going to associate myself with those guys. I'm going to look for that like-minded individual, and dude, I'm happy I've got to be that for at least one person. So,
absolutely, absolutely, and definitely, whatever's in the water at Texas, in Texas, is working. Texas always throws some help, some hellacious conferences. Yeah, I got a lot of good things going. Hopefully, I'll be able to make my way down there at one point or another. But whatever y'all doing, whatever tea or whatever's in the tea or water down there, keep it going. Appreciate it. Appreciate everybody that I've met through Texas. Hands down, the most welcoming, awesome people that I've met. So thank you, Philip. And thank you for all the fellow Texans that I've had on here, and continue to get people to plug me to this person, to that person. So I appreciate you taking the time to do this. Thank you very much.
Got you, dude. I got 5 bedrooms. You're welcome anytime. Come on out.
Awesome. Don't let my wife hear that, because she's going to want to come down there.
Bring her on. Bring her on. We got you.
All right, sir. You have a good one.
You too.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.